Welcome to Ujiria, broadcasting live from Business Radio X Studios. Ujiria is a Greek word meaning health of body and mind in aging individuals. Ujiria Radio is a weekly show celebrating the heroes that contribute to the Ujiria of our elderly and disabled population. Now joining us in the studio are your hosts, Sam Grass and Brad Culp.
Hey, everybody, this is Lee Cantor, and I am joined not with Sam Grass, but I am joined with Brad Culp in Texas. How are you doing, Brad?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing okay.
Other than the fact that you're all alone in the studio this morning.
I know. I had no one to take a picture of.
Yeah, I'm not sure what Sam's doing, but I'm sure
he was probably at the Braves game last night.
Yeah, or, you know, maybe he's sitting around having mimosas with his wife this morning.
We won't know. So what do you got going on in Texas?
Well, I got to tell you, it is hot, hot, hot here. This is, day 25, I think, of over 100 degrees, coming close to setting a record. So
wow.
The only good news is I'm inside. On Monday, I dropped my son off for what they call line camp at Baylor University down in Waco, which is 100 miles south of here, and I'm pretty sure he's going to be outside a good bit of this week, so at least I'm inside, not outside.
So you're the big winner.
So, well, we have got Dorotha Oker with us this morning from the Oker Law Firm. And so without further ado, I think we'll get going with the show. Good morning, Dorotha.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here with us this morning.
My pleasure.
Why don't we start by, we know you're an attorney because you're from the Oker Law Firm, and that was brilliant. But why don't we start with you giving us a little bit of your background, where you grew up, where you went to school, and how you got to Dallas.
I grew up in South Texas. Actually, I grew up as part of a farming family on a cotton farm. And I went to undergraduate at Texas A&M and then came up to Denton here in North Texas and did my graduate school at Texas Woman's University, got my master's. And then I went to the West Coast and got my law degree from Stanford. So I was excited about that because going from a cotton farm to Stanford Law is pretty fun and a little different.
Sounds like you went to school for a long time.
I did. I believe I graduated around age 50. And then when I finally got out of school...
Which makes the picture on your website really deceiving.
They call me Dorotha Gray. But so after I left law school, I went to Washington, D.C. and worked for the government. And I decided to come back to Texas and started working here a while. And now I've got my own law firm where I help seniors and veterans get money from the government. So instead of working for the government trying to get money, now I try to get money from the government.
From the government. You told me earlier when we were talking that you work for the Department of Justice as a litigator.
Yes.
So, I mean, that's got to be, that had to have been tell us a little bit about being a litigator.
I was a litigator for the Department of Justice in the tax division. So my client was the IRS. And if there's two things people don't like, it's lawyers and the IRS. So,
wow, so a double whammy.
Double whammy.
It must have been hard to get dates.
It wasn't fun. So it was kind of fun when you got to really... I used to get injunctions against people who would prepare false tax returns and really just kind of take advantage of people and tell them that, oh, no, you can get all these sort of rebates here, refunds, let me do your tax return. And then the people get audited and owe tens of thousands of dollars because their tax preparer is basically cheating them. So we would get injunctions and do things that were consumer friendly, and that was really nice. And that ended up now resulting in a lot of legislation that regulates tax preparers. So that was always fun to do. But as far as just fighting with people constantly, that wasn't so much fun to do.
Yeah.
So now it's nice. I don't represent the IRS. I represent everyday people, and I don't fight. So I like it a lot better.
Yeah.
But I can fight.
Yeah. If you need to. Right. So how did you get from Washington, D.C. back to Dallas? That seems to be a pretty big move.
My father had some health issues, and I wanted to be closer to home. So he was down in Corpus Christi, and that coming from D.C. down to Corpus Christi takes a lot of time and a lot of money. So I really wanted to be closer and have more time with my family. So the DOJ was very nice, very easy with me, and within a few weeks got me down to Dallas and got me started in Dallas and just really worked with me. And unfortunately, litigation and I just didn't get along, so I eventually left the DOJ and started working with my father, and we started doing veterans benefits. And then my father's still down in Corpus Christi, and so then I decided that I'd just go on my own and do some veterans benefits, and it's really quite fun.
Now, was your father a veteran?
No, my father is not a veteran, and my grandfather was a veteran, and when he was in his final illness, my father started looking in to see what benefits he might be entitled to see if he might be able to get some help. And that's when he discovered how difficult it was to try to figure out what you're entitled to and get it.
Yeah.
So by the time we were able to even know what my grandfather was entitled to, he was already gone. So now what we do is we help people before it's too late figure out what they're entitled to so that it's not one of those things, if I had only known. Because I hear that a lot. I hear, if I had only known you 2 years ago, we could have gotten something. And I think that's a little sad. I think the government's failed us when people start saying, if I'd only known.
Yeah.
Veterans should know what they're entitled to.
It's really interesting that the story you've told is a story that's been told on the show so many times, that people get involved in whatever they're involved in, because of a story, a personal story where their own family struggled. You know, it's very common in hospice, for example, where, you know, somebody has gotten involved in hospice because they had a loved one that went through, you know, some kind of terminal illness, and they ask the question, you know, why didn't I know sooner, or make the comment, if I had only known. So that's really interesting.
Well, it's nice to do something that has personal meaning to you because it gives your life meaning. You spend so much of your day working and doing it that if you're working and it's for something and it gives you meaning, then it doesn't even seem like work. And it's so much nicer. And I think that people do it because the money, you got to pay the bills. But at the end of the day, a lot of people want to actually have something from their work and show and say, look, I helped these people, and they didn't have to go through what I went through.
Right.
And I'm making the world a little bit better one day at a time. And I know a lot of people get into, especially the senior industry or senior healthcare, because of that. And it really just gives everybody's life meaning. You're helping people, and you're helping yourself at the same time because you're doing something you want to do.
That's a great, great, great philosophy, and certainly helps you succeed because you've got a passion for what you're doing. My understanding of veterans' benefits, you know, particularly aid in attendance, is that the advice that you charge around, or the advice that you provide around filling out the application, can't be charged for.
What's really interesting is I hear that a lot. what's a little different about me is I don't just do aid attendance. What I typically get is I get phone calls from people and they say, my father's a veteran, my mother's a widow of a veteran, she needs to move into assisted living, what is she entitled to? And when someone comes and asks that, the VA General Counsel has told Congress, when they were specifically asked, and said, when someone comes and asks an attorney, what am I entitled to? And the attorney has to gather all the documents, look through everything, go through the code, try to figure out exactly what you might be entitled to. The attorney can charge for that. And that's what I do charge for.
Okay.
Is so that I make sure that you're not being pigeonholed into, say, the aid and attendance benefit if you're a widow that pays $1,056. When really, if we did a little bit more research, you could get DIC that pays $1,154. So that's what I like to do, is to make sure that you're getting the exact benefit that you're entitled to by maybe researching a little further or asking for more documents or knowing exactly what the little tweaks in the code are to make sure that you're getting in anywhere that you can get in and get your benefits. What happens is technically filling out the paperwork you can't charge for, but attorneys can charge for a lot. So typically the people who are telling you nobody can charge aren't attorneys because they can't charge. So they don't want you to know that anybody can charge.
Right.
And there's some people who come to me and I can tell right away that, yes, they might be entitled to veterans benefits, but it's not going to help their situation. They need Medicaid or they need something else. And I don't charge for that. That's just a free consultation, send you to the attorney who does what you need. Sometimes they come to me and I'll say, what you really need is Social Security disability and things of that sort. So that's what attorneys are good at, is knowing what you're entitled to and being able to refer you to someone else if you may be entitled to it, but what will really help you is a different benefit.
So I think a lot of people, when they talk about veterans benefits, what they mean is aid and attendance. So help our listeners understand what else is out there that somebody might be eligible for other than aid and attendance.
For seniors, what happens a lot is service-connected benefits. And people think, oh, I had to have a gunshot in the war for it to be service-connected. Well, that is service-connected, but that's not necessarily where service-connected comes from. What happens a lot is there are presumptive conditions. So someone who is in Vietnam, in the Republic of Vietnam, during the Vietnam War, who now has Parkinson's, can get money from the VA because it's presumed that their service caused the Parkinson's, which also means that if a widow comes to me and her husband fought in Vietnam and died of a service-related disease, or say something that would be related to a condition. Say she comes to me, my husband had type 2 diabetes, but he died from a stroke that was caused by type 2 diabetes. That would be service-connected if the veteran was in Vietnam, and that widow would be entitled to at least $1,154 a month, and that it doesn't matter what her assets are, it doesn't matter what her income is, and it doesn't matter if she's healthy. So there's a lot of benefits out there that people aren't even taking advantage of because they think, oh, I must be sick and get aid and attendance, when not necessarily true. If you're sick, you might be able to get service-connected. If you're a veteran that pays if you get 100% service-connected, that's about $2,700 a month, not including additional compensation for dependents or the need for aid and attendance.
Wow.
So it's really important. And then what will happen, I hear a lot, is I went to the VA, I put in my application, they said, yes, my condition service-related, but I only got 40% rating. And I think it's higher. I think I should get more than that. So what we can do is then try to get them up to a 60% rating. Once they're at 60%, we can say, okay, because of this condition, they cannot find employment. And then that will get them up to 100%. The difference between 90% and 100% is $1,000 a month.
Wow.
That's $12,000 a year, that just between 90% and 100%. So when you take someone who came in at 40% and get them up to 100%, that's thousands of dollars a month that they're getting an additional income. And then if they're up to 100%, they also get extra benefits for their spouse if they're rated 100% before they die. So for their surviving spouse. So there's really a lot of benefits out there. There's also a lot of health benefits. Now, post 9/11 veterans, their caregivers can actually get stipends, health insurance, educational benefits. That just recently passed in October. Hmm. So there's lots of benefits that are coming out to help lots of different veterans with all sorts of problems. And so there's additional benefits to help veterans buy houses that are better suited to their disabilities. So to buy an accessible house, to remodel their own house, to make it accessible to them, say if they lost their sight, to help better fit their house for someone who is blind. There's lots of different benefits out there, and they're run by different parts of the VA. So there's some benefits that are run by the Health Administration. There's some benefits that are run by the Benefit Administration, and then there's some benefits run by the VA Loan Administration. So let's say you're injured and you're thinking about modifying your house. There's three different benefits. One from the Loan Administration, one from the Health Administration, and one from the VA Benefits Administration.
Wow.
So you don't know necessarily which one to apply for and which one you fit the little individual idiosyncrasies of each benefit. So that's when a lawyer or accredited agent will come in and help navigate you through the whole process to say, okay, yes, you want to modify your home, this benefit will pay you the most money. Or you can get this benefit, but not a different benefit. So to make sure that you're maximizing...
Some of them are mutually exclusive.
Some are mutually exclusive, some are not. Some you think, oh, I'm going to get this benefit, it's great. Then you find out that the VA's cut off your other benefit, and you're like, oh, this isn't so great. I'm getting less money than I thought I would. So that's why it helps.
So that's amazing. A little while ago, in the beginning, you made a comment about how the government has done a bad job of making people aware of the benefits that they're eligible for. Is there anything, clearly you want people to hire you to help navigate through the process, but how do people find out about this stuff? Is there any way that somebody can educate themselves on this? Because it sounds to me like you really got to know where you're going in order to even get any information.
A lot of times you need to know the name of the benefit to get help. There's a 1-800 number. Some people have gotten help, some people haven't. Personally, I think the best resource is www.va.gov. If you go in there, the handbook, it's very long, but it'll walk you through some of the benefits, most of the benefits, and you can find it. But just for my own personal knowledge, I tried to take a case as if I wasn't a lawyer for a surviving spouse and go to the VA website and see if I could figure out how to do the application on my own. And I went in and I Googled benefits for widows. And I was really surprised. I had to click through three different times to find the form to even fill out. And the only reason I could do that, because I actually knew the form.
Right.
so you
could look at the results and say, oh, that's the one I need.
But I had to, navigating it was kind of difficult. And I think a lot of it is there's a lot of benefits, and Congress is adding new benefits all the time, and the VA has its hands full. They're processing a lot of applications. They're trying to administer health benefits to a lot of different people. The adjudicators are well overworked, and so when you have an overworked adjudicator who's trying to go through all these claims, and then on top of it, they have to develop the claim and come back to you and say, we need these documents. We need these documents.
Yeah.
That's putting more work on them. So I consider attorneys like myself to be working hand in hand with the VA, because you come to me, I'll tell you everything you need and help you fill out the applications, which are a variety of forms. It's
right.
not just one application.
Yeah, yeah.
And get all the documents together. So when it goes to the adjudicator, they can process it so much more quickly, and it makes their job easier.
Sure.
Because I don't think they sit there, come in every day and go, who can I deny today?
Right.
I think they have a set of rules that they have to follow.
Yeah.
And if you make it easy on them and have it go through, then the veteran serves and the VA gets to give out their money that they want to give out
right.
and do everything. So it's hard to let everybody know what all the benefits are when they're changing all the time.
Yeah.
And they're complicated forms.
Yeah, I think... I printed off the aid and attendance application. There's more than one, but one of them was 27 pages, and the other one was more than that.
The last application I turned in to the VA was for a World War II veteran who was healthy, whose spouse was ill. So we were filing for what's called base pension. So he didn't have to have medical evidence for him because he was healthy.
Right.
And we, the application was 37 pages long.
Goodness. And if you get it wrong, then it comes back.
Then it comes back.
You got to start over.
And, or if you don't turn in the proper supporting evidence, it'll come back and say, well, we need to see a statement from the person who, from the company that gives you your pension, saying what you're getting in your pension. And so you've got to both know which forms to use and what supporting evidence to
right.
give in. I talk to people who are CPAs, and I say, imagine if when you did a tax return, you had to send in every receipt that supported every deduction that you took. That's what it's like to do a VA application.
Yikes. yeah, and what I have understood from some conversations with some other folks that provide similar services is that there are millions of dollars that go unclaimed every year.
The VA gets a pretty good budget allocation, and they never have to go to Congress and say, we're out of money. And I know a lot of people will say, oh, well, you're just helping people get money from the VA, and the government can't support it. And I just had someone call me yesterday, and her father, we needed to try to increase the amount of money he was getting from the VA. But at this point, his care is going to cost so much that he's going to be on Medicaid. So people typically go from VA to Medicaid. And I say, the government's going to pay for it. Either way. So it might as well be coming through the VA where the veteran can at least choose where he wants to live.
Right.
Put the money wherever they want. Because one way or another, it's going to go to pay for their care.
Yeah.
So I always prefer the VA and get the money from the VA, because eventually you're more likely than not going to be on Medicaid.
So one of the things that... people, I think, resist when they think about hiring an attorney to help them is just, you know, the notion that this is going to cost a fortune, and, you know, I mean, I can do this myself, and I know it's going to be hard, but, you know, I can't afford an attorney. You know, and clearly when you look at consultants and attorneys, geriatric care managers, you know, the reason you hire them is because they have an expertise that helps you navigate the process. But maybe you could talk to that for a minute.
Well, I always tell people there's a difference between can't pay and won't pay. Whenever I get someone who literally can't pay, I usually do it pro bono. The last person who came to me who I did pro bono had $59 in his bank account. And I think a lot of people forget that there's people out there who have $59 in their bank account. That is all he had to his name. And so when someone comes to me and they have $160,000 in their bank account and they tell me I can't afford an attorney, then it's like, okay, you just don't want to spend for an attorney, and that's their choice to make.
Right.
But remember, there are people out there who have $59 in their bank account. And so what happens sometimes is I get a lot of clients who have tried to do the application themselves, and it's almost the exact same page every time. They get to page 3, and then they say, I have no idea what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And when you're talking about a benefit that might pay up to $2,000 a month or $1,644 a month, that's a lot of money
right.
to do it incorrectly.
Right. Well, and the reality, right, is that that's money they wouldn't have had, and if it takes them 6 months to navigate the process, then, you know, that's money that they've foregone. Potentially.
And it's difficult. And I know people will say, oh, it's just an application. It's just paperwork. And technically, so is your tax return. If you're willing to pay a CPA to help you pay money to the government, you might want to hire someone to help you get money from the government.
Right. Well, and the reality is that the money that they get back will ultimately many times over cover the cost of what they would have paid.
My favorite story is I had a client, again, the one we filed for base pension for his wife, and he had gone to someone who said they would do it for free, and they told him, oh, you're not sick, you don't qualify. So for a year, he didn't know that he qualified. His wife's care was $4,500 a month. And I finally finished up all of his application. We did all sorts of stuff. I had to get his marriage certificate from North Carolina. I had to get some extra service records from the National Archives. So we got it all together, and I'm going, and I visited his wife, and I got where she was staying to fill out a form. And I came to him and talked to him in his house to have him sign some forms. And I told him how nice I thought the place was where his wife was staying. And he said, now you know why I try so hard to keep her there. And he actually started crying. And I pretended that I didn't see it, but that's where the money's going. And he's paying all that money because he truly loves his wife, who half the time doesn't remember she's married to him.
Yeah.
To keep her in the best place that she can be in, because he doesn't want to go on Medicaid and put her in a nursing home.
Right.
And I agree with him. And if we can get the money for him, we can get it. And I get upset when I find out that there's a year's worth that he missed out on
yeah.
because someone who didn't know what they were doing told him he wasn't eligible.
Well, sad story, but a great story that you're able to help him now.
Well, it's great now because when he gets his benefit, he'll no longer be going negative every month.
Right.
Because he still has to pay for his property taxes and his utilities in his house
right.
and all of that. And now they'll have enough money coming in to pay for her care and for him to stay in the house. And then he'll still have money in the bank for if he ever gets ill.
Right.
So it really helps out, and I really enjoy doing it because it's really nice. And
now, do you also get involved in, asset transfers or living wills or trusts or whatever?
I some people have to transfer assets, but usually it's a transfer from one type of bank account to another. Sometimes I tell people need to take it out of an IRA and put it into a joint account, things of that sort. While I've been in my own practice, I haven't had to do a trust, as some people do, and that's really something the attorney needs to tell you. I've gotten people before who call up and say, oh, I need a trust, and I'm like, well, are you sure you need a trust? Because then we get into it, and they didn't need a trust. They just thought they needed a trust because they thought they were over the asset limit, when in reality, because of the way the VA counts the assets, they were under the asset limit.
And it's interesting you say that, because we had a situation where there was a daughter who had parents that she, and I don't know how the story ended, essentially she declined to pursue it because she was afraid that the assets of her parents were going to be transferred into her name, and she was going to end up paying taxes on it. And she couldn't afford that burden, or didn't want that burden. Not sure, but you know, it's a sad story, because she's terminated the services with our company as a result, because she couldn't afford it anymore, and she didn't pursue the VA benefits because she didn't think that she would be eligible, or that they would have, you know, do this trust. And it's really sad, because she really didn't do her research.
Yeah.
And, you know, who knows, maybe she wouldn't have been eligible, or they wouldn't have been eligible at the end of the day, but they didn't even try.
Yeah, well, and what's really interesting is that when your parents gift you money, you don't pay taxes on gifts. The person who receives the gift doesn't pay taxes. And
well,
I get that.
She was worried about the ongoing income from the balance.
Okay. Well, I get it a lot, though. People will say they'll have a misconception of what the tax burden is.
Right.
And they'll think, oh, no, I'm going to have to pay so many taxes. This is so terrible. And I'll just sit down with a spreadsheet and I'll say, look, your taxes will go up by this much. And then it's usually a lot less than people think.
Yeah.
People tend to overestimate how much they'll have to pay in taxes. And then I'll also show people, yes, if we plan it a certain way, your tax burden will increase by X amount, but you'll be receiving this other amount of money. And it's up to them to make the decision, but at least they know.
Right.
And people need to know. And that's what I say sometimes. There's almost two different people who come to me. People who are thoroughly convinced that they aren't eligible for anything, and people who are thoroughly convinced that they're eligible for everything. And they're not always correct.
Right.
So.
Funny. Well, so we're coming close to our time here. So let me ask you before we close, if there are folks out there that either have parents who are veterans, or spouses who are veterans, or veterans themselves that don't need assistance yet, but you know, want to kind of look forward to when they might need assistance, what advice would you give them?
For when they need assistance?
Well, somebody that's maybe just trying to do a little planning, as opposed to knee-jerk reaction after something happens.
Okay. Well, I usually say that people are coming to me in crisis mode because nobody ever sits down and thinks, my life is perfect, I need to go see a lawyer. And I think sometimes when you sit down and you say, my life is perfect, that's usually the best time to go see a lawyer, because then you can make sure your life stays perfect. And it's not necessarily an elder law attorney or a veterans attorney, but you might want to just start looking into it, because you want to make sure that your life stays as good as it does at those days you sit down and say, my life's perfect.
Yeah, yeah.
And I guess that's what I would say would be what people should do, is at the good times start the planning. And that's when you can make sure that the bad times aren't nearly as bad.
Yeah, yeah. So you're not in a panic.
Yes.
At the end of the day.
You don't like crisis mode.
Yeah. That's good advice. All right. So, Dorothea, for listeners that might be interested in contacting you, what's the best way that they do that?
The best way to contact me would be to give me a phone call. My phone number is 214-390-5715. Again, that is 214-390-5715. I actually answer the phone because I like to be able to immediately tell people information that they might need, because, like I said, they're usually calling in crisis mode.
Right.
So they don't need to be waiting 5 days for an appointment for me to tell them that they're not eligible for anything.
Sure.
So I prefer phone calls so we can get everything done right away as fast as possible. And then if there is a need for an appointment, we'll set it up right then.
Okay.
And it's very efficient.
Okay. And is there a website?
There is a website. It is www.okerlawfirm, and that is OCKERLAWFIRM.com.
Very good. Well, Dorothea, thank you again for being with us this morning, and we thank our listeners for tuning in. As always, for those that want to listen after the fact, you can go to www.ugeriaradio.com. We'll be back again next week, same time, same channel. And as always, if the youth of our nation are its greatest resource, then it stands to reason that the seniors of our nation are its greatest treasure. Thank you, and God bless.
Ugeria Radio is sponsored by Griswold Special Care and broadcast live from the Business Radio X studios.